From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Jay Anderson, and here are some of the stories we've been following this week. The Duluth Seaway Port Authority Board has approved a contract for a new executive director. Vanta E. Koda II will replace current director Adolf Ojard, who announced his pending retirement in May. Koda, who is 46, has worked for more than 20 years in transportation and logistics. He becomes only the seventh director of the Port Authority since 1957. And volunteers will hit the beach this Saturday across much of the Great Lakes region for the annual Adopt a Beach cleanup. The event is sponsored by the Alliance for the Great Lakes. It targets beaches and shorelines in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. In addition to removing huge amounts of litter, the cleanup provides information useful to scientists studying Great Lakes pollution. Of special interest are microplastics, which are tiny plastic particles recently discovered in the lakes. Researchers say microplastics could harm fish that mistakenly eat them. They also may absorb chemical pollutants that could be passed up the food chain. Canadian scientists say a small number of Asian carp might be enough to establish a population in the Great Lakes where they would pose serious threats to other fish and the region's economy. In a paper published this month, Kim Cuddington of the University of Waterloo says mathematical models suggest there's a 50-50 chance of the invasive carp getting a foothold if just 10 find their way into one of the lakes. If 20 fish slip through, the probability jumps to 75% under certain conditions. Cuddington says the amount of time needed for bighead and silver carp to establish a large population would depend on factors such as the fish's age when they spawn. She says it's unlikely that Asian carp can be kept out of the lakes forever. U.S. Representative Rick Nolan joined with other mining supporters Wednesday of this week when the U.S. House passed legislation to streamline environmental permitting for mining projects on federal lands. The bill, HF 761, called the National Strategic and Critical Minerals Production Act of 2013, passed the Republican-controlled House by a 246-178 vote. The Duluth News Tribune reports the bill declares most new mining projects as strategic for the nation, speeds up the federal agency review process, and restricts efforts to file lawsuits to stop such projects. The bill essentially sets a 30-month limit for environmental review and a 60-day limit for any challenges. The 8th District Congressman was one of only 15 Democrats to vote in favor of the bill. He had said in recent weeks that he was undecided on the bill. Nolan's office said his vote was to help fix the delayed and broken permitting process holding back projects on Minnesota's Iron Range. It's not clear when or whether the Democratic-controlled Senate might act on the bill, but even supporters say its chances there are slimmer. The White House issued a statement Wednesday saying H.R. 761 would, quote, undermine and remove key environmental rules. A long-awaited safety project for Highway 169 in northeastern Minnesota has been slowed by environmental concerns, the same type of concerns dogging proposed copper nickel mines in the region. At issue is potential water pollution along a stretch between Ely and the Iron Range. The Minnesota Department of Transportation backed moving the highway about a quarter mile to the south, but environmental regulators raised concerns partly because it would require blasting millions of tons of rock that's high in sulfur. When exposed to air and water, it creates sulfuric acid. MnDOT has drawn up a compromise to keep the highway in its existing corridor, but straighten out more dangerous curves than an earlier proposal. Officials plan to have it ready for public comment next year. Divers recovered the body of a longtime Gunflint Lodge fishing guide on Sunday, 3 days after he was thrown into the waters of an Ontario lake after a boating accident. According to the Duluth News Tribune, Bruce Kerfoot, co-owner of the lodge, said provincial police told him that divers found the body of Dennis Todd, who is 59, at about 1:30 p.m. in Northern Light Lake in 46 feet of water. Todd, who had been a guide at Gunflint Lodge for 25 years, had been out fishing on the lake with a new lodge employee on Thursday. The woman told officials that she and Todd were on their way back to the lodge when their boat struck something in the water in Trafalgar Bay. The two were thrown into the water, and Todd, who was not wearing a life jacket, did not resurface. The woman, who was wearing a life jacket, was able to swim to an island, signal another angler, and then alert authorities. Northern Light Lake is in Ontario, a short portage from Saginaw Lake near the end of the Gunflint Trail. A search team using side-scan sonar quickly found Todd's body Sunday, about 50 feet from where the woman thought he went into the water. Todd's body was taken to Thunder Bay for a standard post-mortem examination. Sex trafficking continues to be a problem plaguing the Northland, and one community in particular has seen the devastating effects firsthand. WTIP's Kelly Schoenfelder has this report.
Around 40 people gathered for a panel discussion Thursday night at the American Indian Center in downtown Duluth. The meeting was an opportunity to discuss the issue of trafficking and prostitution in Duluth and on ships on Lake Superior, and specifically the trafficking of Indigenous women and youth. But this isn't a new issue.
This trafficking in Indigenous people seems to have been going on for many, many years. It seems about 140 years in this area here. It's very, very difficult for a number of reasons to quantify the problem. And we know that by all reports, trafficking is on the rise in Minnesota generally. And so I really can't give you numbers. Unfortunately, the stigma is so great, and the issues with safety are of such great concern that it's very difficult for people to come forward. So to the best of my knowledge and belief, there has not been any formal research undertaken to really quantify the problem.
That's Raina Crow, organizer for Idle No More Duluth and one of the people leading a grassroots campaign to address the trafficking of Native women in the area, an issue that she says is very prevalent in her community.
I don't know of a single Anishinaabe family that has not directly been affected by this, an auntie, a grandma, a mother, a daughter, or a niece.
The meeting Thursday was the first of many that Raina and others hope to have to gather support and resources for the victims and survivors of trafficking in the Duluth area. Some of the participants on the panel were survivors of trafficking themselves, and they shared their experiences as part of the discussion.
And they made me feel beautiful, bought me whatever I wanted, and I didn't know that the bartender, the owner of the bar that I hung out at, was actually selling me. I didn't know that. Had I known that, I don't know, maybe I would have asked for a cup. I don't know. But I didn't know that that was going on behind my back. I just knew that my own self-worth, my own self-gratification was being met by these men.
Raina and others are planning a similar event on Saturday, September 21st at 7 p.m. at the University of Wisconsin-Superior Yellow Jacket Union.
Then we're going to do the same thing on Saturday night with a little, you know, in terms of recruiting, educating community members, and hopefully recruiting them in to help us. And we have Robert Anamiki Horton, who is also from, he's from Thunder Bay, and he is pretty well versed in some of the connections that we think might exist between the missing and murdered women in Canada and trafficking of women in Minnesota and Canada. So Robert will be appearing at UW Superior at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, and we're hoping that after his presentation, we'll be able, again, to make that call out and get community members to literally sign up to help us out. So right now we're at this education and research stage and just beginning to try to put together working groups to help out. We absolutely have to have community members who will step up and be visible, and we need to send a message to the survivors, I think, of these crimes, that they are not to blame, that we love them, we want them to come home, and that as a community, we are going to start doing everything possible to ensure that they're safe from here on out.
For WTIP, I'm Kelly Schoenfelder.
You've been listening to the North Shore Weekend News Wrap-Up. To hear more from the WTIP News team and to check out the full versions of our stories, visit us at WTIP.org. For North Shore Community Radio, I'm Jay Anderson, wishing you a great weekend.